Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com. Now here are your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. Thank you for hanging around to listen to our guest that we have brought in. Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Yep. Kim Ehrman is the founder of EcoBeneficial. She is an environmental horticulturist specializing in ecological landscapes and native plants. Welcome to the program, Kim.
Oh, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to not only enlighten Holly and myself, but we love bringing people on to enlighten all of us across the country and all of our stations.
So could you tell us, Kim, what is an ecological landscape?
Sure. Well, you know, our conventional landscapes tend to focus on aesthetics and often perfection. And an ecological landscape can still be beautiful, but it really focuses on a healthy ecosystem, really supporting both wildlife and human beings, things like healthy soil, healthy air, prevention of soil erosion, and one of my favorite topics, pollination services.
Well, that's pretty interesting, and it's kind of, you know, make it work for the person, but also make it work for nature as well, because a lot of times we do landscapes, and it's all about the homeowner, all about what we want, and it kind of actually messes up the nature procedure.
Sure, and we kind of forget oftentimes that we depend on the nature around us. The UN defined the services that nature provides us with as ecosystem services, like a lot of those things I just mentioned, clean air, clean water, pollination services, prevention of soil erosion, healthy soil, all those things. So we really owe it to ourselves and to the nature around us to support our ecosystems.
Absolutely. Especially, you know, give to nature. And also with that, look what nature is doing and try to adapt to them rather than making them adapt to us, which we all seem to want to do more often than the other.
Sure. So there are many steps that are both pleasing to us as gardeners and, of course, you know, for many in your audience, home gardeners, things that are beautiful and helpful. But, you know, there are a lot of these services that we can support without really doing too much. So, for example, if you're growing vegetables at home, you probably are anxious to have a better quality of vegetables and or fruit and increased yields, right?
Yeah.
So how do we do that? Well, very simply, we can start thinking about putting in more flowering plants that support the animal pollinators that will help us with that job. And about a third of the food that we eat is animal pollinated, not just by bees, but there are many other pollinators, too, that are pollinators of, you know, specific species of fruits and vegetables. Folks will know the bumblebee probably is one of our great pollinators of things like blueberries. But there, in some cases, there are plants that we're growing that don't require animal pollination, but can benefit from it. And a classic example for home gardeners who are growing vegetables are tomatoes. So even though tomatoes are self-fertile, they really benefit from pollination, specifically by bumblebees.
Well, you bring up a very, to some people, maybe a very shocking statistic there, that one-third of everything that we eat, if it wasn't for bees, we would be losing out on some of very things that we enjoy every day or look forward to. So that's one of the reasons why we want to continue to increase the pollination population rather than just whatever. Nature will take care of itself. Mm-hmm. Well, nature will take care of itself if we don't mess it up.
And the number is even bigger when we start to think about all the produce that doesn't require animal pollination but benefits from it. So that's even a bigger number. And then if we think about all the flowering plants on Earth that require animal pollination, well, that's about 80% or so of all the flowering plants on Earth that need some sort of animal pollinator, whether it be a bee or a beetle or a bat or even we have wasp pollinators. We have so many different types of pollinators, moths, butterflies, many different types of pollinators.
Okay. Now, what are some resources for people to find out what plants are native to their area?
Sure. And so that's a really important fact and factor in gardening ecologically, is really using native plants that have evolved in your region that support the regional wildlife. And so it's getting easier. It's getting easier to figure out what is native. On my website, which is ecobeneficial.com, that's my company, EcoBeneficial. So I have some regional plant lists that are supportive to pollinators that listeners can reference. But I also encourage listeners to go to their Native Plant Society website and join up a regional or statewide Native Plant Society and get information there as well.
Well, you bring up the native plants, and for people who are not aware of the importance of growing native plants, you've touched on some of that, but also those native plants, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, without native plants, you don't have that population of pollinators or other beneficial insects or even enemies that those beneficial insects will help combat.
Well, yeah, native plants are, the term is loosely used, and I think best practice is to use native plants that have evolved in your region and that are appropriate to your site, that evolved for many, you know, typically many hundreds of years. There are so many dynamics that are going on in our landscapes that we're not even aware of, these huge food chains where one critter is eating another critter is eating another critter, and a particular type of pollinator is a specialist at pollinating a particular plant. You know, one plant might be incredibly useful and supportive of a hummingbird, while that same plant wouldn't appeal to, say, a short-tongued bee, which will be looking for different types of plants.
For sure. Now, when it comes to pollinators, we've touched on it a little bit here. What are some ways, besides, you know, flowers, what are some ways in which we can bring them in? Is there homes or things that we can construct to allow them to live in our property? Or what's some
sure.
good things to do so, about that?
So you're touching on a really important point. It's critical to have floral resources, i.e. flowering plants, whether they be trees or shrubs or perennials, a combination of all of the above, that are useful to pollinators. Not all pollinators go to every plant. You can learn more about that on my website and my new book, The Pollinator Victory Garden. So going to kind of get to know what pollinators you have and what plants they want. So having that floral buffet, as it were, throughout the growing season is important, but pollinators also have to live somewhere. So it's critical that we provide them with habitat. We provide them with a place to live. So in the case of bees, for example, we have about 4,000 species or so of native bees in North America, and the vast majority of them are ground dwellers. They nest in the ground. So a simple thing like keeping a patch of bare soil in a sunny area as a habitat for some of these ground nesting native bees is really important. And then for the cavity nesters, leaving some pithy stems of plants that have died back, that's a very useful way to attract them, and allowing them to go into beetle burrows or cracks in our stone walls. There are many places those bees can utilize. Leaving some dead logs in our landscape that beetles tunnel into, and then bees use those tunnels as nesting sites. So the habitat is very important too. And then of course, if we start decreasing our lawn and encourage more native flowering plants, that's very helpful. But important to make sure that we're eliminating pesticides. Pesticides and pollinators do not mix well. So that is something that the Americans aren't used to thinking about. I think in Europe, a little bit more advanced than we are with regard to that. So we're thinking about using, and you alluded to it, beneficial insects, natural enemies, attracting those insects that help keep our pest populations down. And we can do that with some small flowered native plants, like most people know what a yarrow is. That's a wonderful native plant to attract some of those beneficial insects that are natural enemies. And, you know, really thinking about this constant flow of resources for nectar and pollen throughout the entire growing season and not having a gap period. Really super important in the beginning of the season and also super important in the fall, but all throughout the growing season to have that constant floral buffet of diverse species of plants for diverse types of pollinators.
Yeah, and we always say don't spray the dandelions. That's one of the first feeds that these bees have, and you spray them and they take it back to the hive, and that's just detrimental to the whole system.
Right.
Well, here, you talked about the many of the bee species live in the ground or in the nest. What advice would you give to a homeowner if they see these bees nesting or developing or next to where the kids play or how they enter and exit the home? What's some advice you would give somebody in that situation?
So ground nesting bees typically want an area of bare soil or pretty lightly vegetated soil in full sun. So if you see them nesting already and it's an area that you can tolerate them existing, encourage it. Encourage it. If they're in an inconvenient spot, you might try to kind of recreate a similar area by clearing some grass, leaving the soil bare. Has to be soil that's workable, can't be too sandy, can't be too clay-based and heavy. Has to be workable by the bees. And just leave that area alone. And if it's something you can't tolerate looking at, well, get a short screen of maybe some native grasses as a buffer in front of it, making sure not to shade the area out too much. But those are some ways that we can accommodate those particular types of bees.
Definitely. Now, where can our listeners find out more about you?
Well, again, my website is ecobeneficial.com, all one word. And I've got an enormous amount of information there, including some of my own podcasts. And also, I encourage folks to pick up my new book called The Pollinator Victory Garden, Win the War on Pollinator Decline with Ecological Gardening. It just came out in January.
Great book, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, Kim, we greatly appreciate you taking time not only in educating Holly and myself on bees and pollinators, but also all of our listeners across the country.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Well, you're very welcome.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.